Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey guys, Ryan Sprague here. As you all know, the Somewhere in the Skies podcast is always free to consume, but it isn't free to create. That's why I've started the Somewhere in the Skies Patreon campaign. On a monthly basis, you give what you think the show is worth. You'll be helping the show continue, grow, and to be something truly communal. And remember, there are rewards for each level of contribution, and the list is only growing. So please, help Somewhere in the Skies now by becoming a patron. To contribute and to learn more, visit www.patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you for your support. And now, on with the show.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Georgie. What a nice boat. Do you want it back?
Yes, please.
You look like a nice boy. Do you want a balloon too, Georgie?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers.
Oh, well, I'm Pennywise the Dancing Clown. Now we aren't strangers, are we?
I should get going now.
Oh. Without your boat? Here. Take it.
Hi guys, Ryan Sprague here. And this is a very special episode of Somewhere in the Skies. As I'm sure you're well aware, the highly anticipated film, It, premiered late last week to much acclaim. And I, like many others, flocked to the theater to see it. Now, as a very big Stephen King fan, I had high hopes and expectations for this remake. And so did my good friend and colleague, Andrew Sanford, whom you've heard on the show before. So after our viewings, we sat down to discuss the film in depth. And this is what came of it. I think it goes without saying, this is a very spoiler-heavy discussion, so you've been warned. If you haven't seen the film yet, I highly suggest going out and seeing it before listening. And if you have, I hope you had a terrifyingly good time, like we did. So sit back while we discuss It, directed by Andre Muschietti, and starring Finn Wolfhard, Sophia Lillis, and Pennywise himself, Bill Skarsgård. God, I hate clowns. Hey guys, Ryan Sprague here from Somewhere in the Skies, and this is new for us. This is the first episode where we will not be covering UFOs or the paranormal per se. We will be talking sort of about the supernatural today. I am back with Mr. Andrew Sanford, who you guys have heard on the show before, and we are fresh off our viewing of It. Andrew, how you doing, my man?
Oh, Ryan. Ryan.
That's me.
Yeah. Right. I was trying to do the... It will be a few more times that I see it, but I will get Bill Skarsgård's voice down, his It voice.
Yes.
His Pennywise voice.
The youngest, I think, of the Skarsgårds. Am I correct in that?
Oh, he is absolutely... I don't know.
you're not a specialist on the Skarsgårds?
I'm not a Skarsgård specialist.
All right,
I took a course... It was like a 3-week course, and I got to Skellen, and I was like, this is enough for me.
Community college, I assume.
Stellan Skarsgård. No, Stellan. Yeah, it was a community college. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
It's like Chris Rock said, I slapped $5 down and I went in. I was like, let me get my learn on. Community college.
So you saw this movie in New York. I saw it in Hollywood. So we probably had very similar experiences, I would assume. Was it a very lively crowd at your viewing?
You know what? It was. I went to a 34th Street theater. And I will say, for those of you who are not familiar with New York, you have your like sections broken up of Midtown, and some of the bigger sections of theaters are on 42nd Street by Lincoln Center on 68th Street, and then there's a theater down on 34th. Don't get me wrong, there are a lot of movie theaters, but those would, I would say, would be like the main ones, and maybe one in like Union Square. Anyway, 34th is probably the least busy of all of those. Mm-hmm. So while I didn't have a super full theater, they were into it, which was nice, and nobody was too. There was a few people that were chatting a little bit, but they were – I always have a little bit more leniency when I can tell they're clearly, like, enjoying themselves, right. And that's kind of why they're talking. That's, that I'm fine with. It's when somebody's just like, so, you know, I just figure if we go to Chipotle after this and then we go – like, that's when I start to get upset. But they were into it. And what I loved, and I haven't seen something like this in a while, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit more later, everybody started with kind of like fun jump scares, like, ooh, like, oh, where's, oh man, this is crazy. It'd be kind of loud when they got scared. And then they got progressively more creeped out as the movie went along. And those scares became more like uncomfortable screams. And I was like, this is pretty fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, so I'm kind of the same as you. Like, I get very hesitant to go to openings or big movie events because I'm always afraid there's going to be that one jerk who's like talking the whole time or, like you said, just like doing it to be noticed. No, I went to the Arclight Theater in Hollywood, and this place was massive. Like, I don't know how many people this holds. I'm guessing like 600-700. It was freaking huge.
Nice.
So you had like the stadium feel to it, and I'm like, oh great, so the odds are against me that someone's gonna be an asshole for this whole movie. I was wrong. I mean, it was
nice.
It was incredible. It was a communal experience. Everyone had a great time. It is funny, however, the girl I sat next to, so okay, the movie hasn't even started, we're into maybe the first preview, and people are still walking in, trying to find their seats. It's the previews. Like, I get that. A lot of people don't want to come and watch half an hour of trailers. Yeah. So we're in the first trailer. The movie's not starting for another 20 minutes. And this girl is just vocally to everyone saying, are you serious? Come on, time. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? So while I am like this person in the sense that I hope people don't come late to the movie, I was like, you are really yeah. Is this happening
first
right now?
First of all, you, as you made very clear, you're in a theater that seats hundreds.
Yes.
Statistically, there are going to be late people. Statistically. And that's what we have reserved seats for now. I think we can talk just about the movie going experience for a little bit longer. I don't know how I lived without reserved seats. I really don't.
Same here.
It's the new sliced bread.
It's
reserved
incredible.
Seats at the movie theaters. Yeah, you can quote me on that. Reserved seats at the movies are the new sliced bread.
I love it. There's no pressure. There's no holding seats for people.
Nope.
You know, hopefully you get, like, if you're going with one other person, you get that little two-person section. Don't have to worry about elbow room. You know what I mean? It just
– absolutely.
It makes the experience so much better.
Yeah. And that's what they have to do now. You have to not, like – going to the movies can't seem like a chore, or people definitely won't go. Labor Day weekend – had the worst box office for a Labor Day weekend since the early 90s, with the number one movie in America being Hitman's Bodyguard.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Ugh.
Now, don't get me wrong. On a recent episode of Halfway Son of a Black Man, we did talk about the fact that myself and my good friend Sean Lanigan did contribute to Hitman's Bodyguard making some kind of money, but I did not assume that it was going to keep going. But there was nothing else out
yeah.
when we went to the movies. And that's why it – is cleaning up right now. It debuted $13.5 million for a midnight screening for an R-rated movie.
Unbelievable. A remake, nonetheless.
It beat Deadpool.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that's great. See, I'm glad. See, I'm looking right now, and it's got a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, man. It's pretty impressive.
That's impressive. And we'll get into that, because you and I spoke earlier about some qualms we have with this movie. But overall, just a very fun time at the movies. Perfect
for
summer.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Especially for a big – I'm all for – now, I actually want to see what the budget was for this movie. Mm-hmm. $35 million is not a lot of money. Especially for and that's one of the things that'll come back later the more we talk about, especially Derry, the town that this movie takes place in specifically. You can tell that this movie did the best that it could with a very $35 million is not a lot of money these days to make a movie that needs to be spectacle worthy. But it's going to make that budget back tenfold. Now, don't get me wrong. 35 is a lot for a horror movie, especially these days when people are running on like the Blumhouse method, which is like make something for $3 million and then it makes 90
on their iPhone. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, $35 million. Yeah, it's cleaning up and it's going to do really well for an R-rated movie. That's nuts. And it's exciting for me that hopefully between this and all the Conjuring movies and stuff like that, that studios are putting their faith in these big mythical horror type movies, even if they leave that out.
that part of it.
I also saw, oh man, Ryan, I don't think we've talked in a while. You're very familiar with my love of the first Conjuring movie and my obsession with the Warrens that came after that. I finally saw Conjuring 2 the other day.
Oh my God.
I was not a fan.
agreed, yes. For anyone who has not seen Conjuring 2, do not waste your time.
Oh, man. I was... Oh, boy. And don't get me wrong. There was a lot of problems with it as a movie, but I remember leaving the first Conjuring and be like, I want to see more movies where the Warrens really like go out and like Scooby-Doo it up and just solve a bunch of mysteries. And I was that started to happen in this movie. And I was like, I don't want this anymore.
I don't want it.
But so it. Yes. I wanted to ask you this because you had mentioned that you're how big a part does it play in your life, if any at all?
It was the first book of Stephen King's that I ever picked up. So I was, I believe, 11 years old when and in my barber shop in Syracuse, New York, I would go every second Saturday of the month with my father to get my haircut. And it was on the bookshelf at my barber shop. So every once a month or what have you, I would read a small section of this book every time I went. So after about, 4 years, I finally finished this massive book, which was interesting because I was getting older as I was reading the book. And as we know, youth and growing up have a lot to do with this story.
Absolutely.
Now, I believe I started reading it at way too young an age, but it definitely got me hooked on Stephen King. I've read so much of his work since then. I'm a fan of some of his movies. There's some contention with a lot of them, but I would say 11 years old is when I was first introduced to this story. How about you?
I have vague memories of seeing the miniseries when I was very, very little. I it's funny, my parents had kind of a not like a Wild West type attitude, but I got with the stuff that I saw when I was younger. I have an older brother. He's about 4 years older than me. And the stuff that he wanted to see, we usually saw at first. You know, that would change. But I saw a lot of stuff early. And I remember seeing it very, very young and being really scared of that movie. And then at one point, my younger brother, it became something that me and my younger brother would go and get from the video store constantly, like almost every outing. We would just watch this over and over again to the point where we still to this day will just text each other random quotes from it. And I tried to read the book at one point when I was younger. I was probably around like 12 or 13. And there's no way I would have finished it. And I actually I remember a lot of stuff from the beginning of the book, and then I actually finally read it all the way through this past summer and finished it the day before I saw the movie. But I am a huge Stephen King fan. I actually have been watching. What did I watch yesterday before I went to see? I watched Room 237, the documentary about all those ridiculous conspiracy theories about The Shining.
Right, yeah.
I watched The Dark Half last week, which is on Hulu right now, which I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but you absolutely have to watch it, especially as a writer. And I watched The Stand recently. I love Steve. I love, love, love Stephen King. And I was very excited for this movie. And I will say, it definitely did not meet my expectations, but I was not disappointed, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. No, I'm with you on that. No, I'm sure some people will disagree with us, but this is not the buzz that this movie has created had a lot to do with the marketing, I think. And now that the movie's coming out, I think we're going to see maybe a slight decline in the quality of ratings and reviews that come out on it, because it's definitely flawed. There's definitely some issues, but we'll get into that. I think what would be cool is for those who don't know what this story is about. Everyone knows Tim Curry, the clown, but I'm going to put the pressure on you here, man. Would you mind giving us like a brief synopsis of what this story is about, this 1,000-page book?
Sure, absolutely. So about 1,300 – no, a little less than 1,200, okay. A little less than 1,200 pages. So essentially there is a it starts off with a young child who is murdered, and it sets off a string back in 1957, and it sets off a string of events where this group of kids who are brought together this one summer, some of them friends before, some of them not – and they find out that there's this evil entity that resides in their town that is feasting on children. And this connects to events – now, I will say – I want to say right here that even kind of discussing the story of the book gives spoilers for the movie.
Yes. Now, let's make this warning
full
now.
On, yeah, spoiler alerts from here on in.
Yes.
Especially when discussing the book, because for those who may not be familiar with it, the property that is being presented right now in the movie is only half of the story. In the book, the events of these people as children discovering that there's this entity feeding on children work as flashbacks to a main story, which is 27 years after that young boy is killed, where the murders start up again. And this one guy who stayed behind calls on all his friends to return, and that's when they start to remember the events of their childhood and them having to take on this malevolent being. And it is very much a story about childhood and how it shapes who we become as people, and then also how we deal with certain ugliness that it's, you know, like Stephen King, it's all about a small town ugliness. And yeah, and a lot of it also is just a big old, it's a ghost story, and it's also a monster story, and it's anything that would have frightened kids in the 50s. That's right. Kind of what he was going for. But yeah, so it's about these kids, this ragtag group of kids, the Losers Club, having to come together to fight this evil being, both in their youth and as adults. And it's pretty fantastic. Having just finished the book, it's a real phenomenal story that he concocted. And it's got so much, which is why my expectations were so high when I had especially heard. I have some friends who do reviews and who had seen an early screenings of the movie, and they said it's very faithful and they do a really good job. And I think it's just one of those things where I have to realize, like, unless they do a 10-episode miniseries, which almost happened at one point back in before the original miniseries, they're not going to be able to touch on everything. So my problems lie with some other choices that they made, but we'll get into that. But yeah, that's pretty much the story. That's my long, drawn-out way of explaining what the story is.
I think it was pretty good and concise.
Oh, well, thank
for
you, Ryan. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Now, this is an updated version. We should point that out, that this 2017 yes. version is in the 80s. So we've bumped it up a few decades, which I thought was awesome.
I thought it was a good choice. And I mean, they have to.
Absolutely. Now we had the New Kids on the Block played a big part in this.
Oh, it was great. Oh, aesthetically, I don't think this movie made a single misstep.
It was
everything looked beautiful. Everybody looked like it was 1989. Now, don't get me wrong. I was born in 1989, but I've seen a lot of movies from 1989. They get that look and they get that feel. I remember turning to my fiance at one point and saying, like, I love Eddie's shorts, because he had these, like, little red bike shorts with, like, little rainbows on the side. Mm-hmm. Like, it just – it was great.
It reminded me a lot of Stranger Things, to be completely honest.
Sure. Well, I mean, Stranger Things gets a lot from it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
It's cyclical, man.
Absolutely. And we even have one of the actors who's in both of them.
Oh, my God. That kid, Finn. I have the Wikipedia page pulled up just so I don't screw up anybody's names. But it's – because one thing I will say is every person in this cast deserves a round of applause. I thought the acting was phenomenal, top to bottom. There wasn't a single miscast person. Even when they had some, like, subpar writing, they still, you know, those kids were good.
Absolutely.
Finn Wolfhard is his name,
yep.
Who played little Richie Tozier.
Now, my favorite was Jack Grazer, the hypochondriac kid.
So here's my question, and that was something where there were some details that they changed that were odd to me. Like, right from the beginning, they introduced Mike Hanlon, the black kid, mm-hmm. as being watched over by his grandfather, who tells him about the things in this town. That is complete, like, a detail that for some reason I'm not sure what they did. Maybe so it's not just like every kid dealing with their parents, but like his parents are fully alive during the events of this. Of that are transpiring
right.
In the book and in the original miniseries. So to make it his grandfather was strange. And another thing that's strange is they kind of took Stanley, who is the Jewish kid, and made it so he – I don't know. They kind of stripped a lot of details away from him, because I know they have Eddie, who is the hypochondriac, the one who has the pills and the placebos and stuff like that.
Yes.
But then you have him as the hypochondriac, but then Stanley is also supposed to be like a germaphobe all of a sudden. And it was a weird – like there is that element to Stanley, but because – they didn't like really flesh out how much of Eddie's sickness was in his head. It just kind of came out of nowhere.
Right.
Those two kind of blended together for me a little bit. There was a little bit of that where I was starting to lose, like, they lost their individuality occasionally.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people are also correlating this to Stand By Me. Like, it's very similar in terms of having each young boy have very unique characteristics that make them stand out and make them a part of the group. And I think you're right. I think as this 2017 movie goes on, we did lose some of that. The character choices were not exactly what I think they were. They were just there to move the plot along.
Yes.
But again, like you said, the writing for this movie was not top-notch. As for the acting and directing, I can't imagine having to work with a cast this young and make this story so compelling, so heartwarming, and so absolutely terrifying as well.
Yeah.
So kudos to the director. What is his name?
Andy Muschietti.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but yeah, the other movie he did was Mama.
Mama.
Which I have not seen, actually, but I've heard very good things about.
Yes.
What's interesting is, I mean, this movie went through one of those classic development hell type situations where Cary Fukunaga, who wrote and directed the first season of True Detective, and he did Beasts of No Nation, he wrote and was supposed to direct this movie. So the first draft, and apparently a lot from his first draft carried over into this movie. But there's also a lot that didn't, because his first draft actually leaked online, I would say like 6 months ago or something like that. And there's definitely more. What's interesting is, and one of my biggest problems with the movie was that I did not feel that the town was enough of a character, which is very important, I feel anyway. Very important to the source material. You really get to know Derry by the end of the book and even the miniseries, I felt. And this one, I feel like they didn't do that as much. It could have been a budgetary issue, but I know they also had to cut some flashbacks, like a big part of the book, and they do it a little bit more in the miniseries through Mike Hanlon, where he does a lot of research into Derry's past and all these different events that are going on. And that stuff gets kind of glossed over in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I thought was weird.
Not only that, but they gave it to a different character. You know,
they did. And I mean, Ben does some of that in the book, but it was kind of they really did not give Mike a lot to do in this movie except for be saved at one point. But I love that, by the way. The rock fight was pretty fantastic.
Rock war!
Oh my God, that was awesome. And to have I love and it shows this dude's skill as a director that like they build it up like this big thing, and then the camera just pulls back and you see that it's just kids whipping rocks at each other.
Right, like five That's feet away from each other.
Yeah, they're just whipping rocks at each other. It's awesome.
It's great. It's one of those moments in cinema where like and you see this in Ant-Man too, where like when you zoom in on a scenario, it's so epic and big in scope, and then when you get the broader picture, it looks so small in comparison, which is wonderful. You know, that perception alone just makes for great humor. And that's another thing about this movie. I think a lot of people are coming out saying that was more funny than anything.
Sure.
It's scary as hell. Do not get me wrong. There are some moments in this movie that were absolutely terrifying. Not many, but there were some that really left my audience, at least, completely silent or cringing in their seats.
They really earned that R rating, in at least as far as like violence against children is concerned. Right. And having kids act like, you know, kids. Especially from the late 80s, like they swore and they smoked cigarettes, and or at least one of them did.
You know, nervous of meeting a girl for the first time. Like, everything was there. Every element of, like, a young man's life was definitely there. You know, we have one female character, basically, in this whole movie, which I think she really stood on her own and did a wonderful job.
She was great, and I was really glad. Oh, man, I got real nervous at one point, because they took some like sweeping changes that, like, for instance, having Georgie at the very beginning, the child who's killed, get like taken, which I didn't really like. Bill's motivations and the main character's motivation, well, main quote unquote, in the source material are a little bit more noble. It's more of like, because he knows full well that his brother has been killed, and in this one they make it's his brother's been taken, and Bill doesn't think he's been killed, so he's on a search to try to prove that his brother isn't killed, and on the way discovers that he should take out this clown. And it felt like an odd choice to me. And then they doubled down on that by having Pennywise abduct Beverly at one point, the only female character.
Yes.
And I got really nervous for a second that she was going to be just like a damsel in distress.
Exactly.
Until they made it very clear that she was taken because he couldn't hurt her because she wasn't afraid of him. That was a nice touch. I was nervous, and then they pulled it back, especially since she, like, because it also plays back into she's the first one that's able to hurt him because she's, like, not afraid.
Yep.
But then, and we talked about this earlier, because they don't really get into who or what it is, you don't get as clear of a picture as to why they're able to hurt it. Things just kind of happen.
Yep, yeah. There's really no rules established. There's no,
mythology
behind what it is, which is fine. I think at least in this first chapter, we're not going to know what it is. We're not going to know why it's doing this. We don't know how big a role it plays in the town of Derry. What I think is really interesting is how it feeds off of the fear of each of these boys, which was, I don't know if this is in the original version, the miniseries, but when they go into the house and they experience each of their individual fears.
The house is not in the miniseries at all.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now,
No, that's not true. It's in it very briefly. Stanley goes in there.
Okay.
It's in it very briefly, and he sees like somebody like wrapped in bandages and stuff and is able to escape by name.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
All of his birds, which is a callback to something that happens in the book, but they do the individual fears in the miniseries, but I do agree that they there was much more of a potency to it this time.
Yes,
Which I enjoyed. It was scary. Like, some of that stuff was real creepy and odd and disturbing, and I could appreciate that they really like went all out with having these scenarios that the clown was creating. That's why I didn't mind the CG as much.
Let's talk about that. Now, this
sure.
This movie definitely had some flaws with its CGI.
Mm-hmm.
It was not the best. Again, we were working on a minimal budget, and it did distract a little. But like you mentioned this to me earlier, how do you create such a fantastical and nightmarish world with the budget you have, with a story like this, without CGI? I don't think it would have been possible.
Especially the shooting schedules people want nowadays, and like things like it's a practical, like, people, practical effects are fantastic, but they're also very difficult.
And expensive.
So it's, and now you can, what's great about this movie, because you could argue the same thing for, like, a perfect example of trying to use CG in a movie that should be, really able to take advantage of CG and failing miserably is the Nightmare on Elm Street remake from 2010.
Absolutely.
2009, 2010. It is so devoid of any, like, it just feels like a computer simulation.
Yeah.
In this, I thought they did a good job on some of it. There was even a shot, especially, where his head is kind of like moving almost. It's like very disorienting. I forget who was looking at him. I think it might have been like Eddie. But his head is almost kind of like distorting in the picture. And at first I thought like, oh man, that's like bad CGI. And then I was like, no, this is just really like disorienting. Like, this is really, they got down that like he is really trying to torture these people and play off of them and make things weird and make things feel like not real. Like when he pops out of the like that slide scene. Oh my god. Oh, that was so cool.
Yeah. So yeah, for those who don't know, there's a scene where there's a projector that's like starting to have a life of its own, and it's flipping through these projections very quick, and we're seeing it getting closer and closer, and then boom, he just comes out of the projection screen.
Yeah.
And
it's like this giant, oh my god, it was so cool.
Yeah,
some of that stuff was really, honestly, and what's interesting is I found myself really enjoying the parts with Pennywise the most, and I didn't necessarily have that feeling in my other experiences with the source material, because usually the things, and this is another one of the problems that I had with the movie, is that while they did have some elements of like truly terrible human beings, which is always a big thrust in Stephen King's work, which is that like the monsters that we usually have to fear are humans. Mm-hmm. They didn't do it enough for me. Like, it's only kind of slightly there, and then in the times when it's supposed to look like it is making this happen, you're not really sure, because you've already, like, they just didn't, I feel like they didn't have enough maybe even interest in that, if that makes sense. Like a perfect example is like Eddie's mom. Eddie's mom gets all the teeth taken out of her as far as like being a biting character, because she just, at first they present her as being like almost apathetic as far as like what he goes and does, and then all of a sudden she becomes more like the character from the book, which is just overly concerned with what he's doing. And it is so then when he finally like stands up to her, there was nothing to it, really, which should be a big part of it. Like in the book and in the miniseries, she is an antagonist. She's just as bad as Pennywise, you come to find. She's just as bad as Henry Bowers. Like she's one of the bad guys, whether she means to be or not. And she's truly frightening just in the kind of grip that she has on Eddie. And I don't, aside from Beverly's dad in this version, they don't really get into that with the humans. And with his, it's even simplified, where he's just a creep. He's just gross. There's no, like in the, they just full blown make it so that he's like trying to have sex with her, which is only kind of like hinted at in the books and the miniseries. Like it's never really explicit.
Yeah.
You know, he's terrible, but it's more leveled than that, which is what makes it scarier. It's more real. Like he was a cartoon in this movie.
Yeah, same with the older boy who's kind of bullying all the losers in the club, who later in the movie literally becomes a murderer.
Oh, Henry Bowers.
Yes.
That one, yeah, they didn't really – that was another one where there was no – it was all very sudden. Like, all of a sudden, he's snapped. And, like, they didn't do enough to show, like, he's just kind of a – bully. And I, like, don't get me wrong, bullies don't need motivation necessarily, but there was nothing here. They talk about at one point how he's like, oh, like Beverly says to Ben, the fat boy in the group,
quote unquote fat boy, yeah,
fat boy. She says like, oh, everybody knows he's got a bone to pick with you, or like he's after you, or something like that. And we're like, it's like, all right, could you feel what do you
why?
Mean? What happened?
Yeah,
yeah. I was like, I was like, I've read the book. I know why, but I would like to know as a moviegoer, please.
Right.
Just something. And there was a lot of weird, like they chose weird opportunities to pick showing over telling and vice versa. This is something that I don't think any of them will ever be able to get across. I guess it just comes across easier in prose, but in both the miniseries and in this movie, they have ridiculous scenes where the kids are just like, I guess it's just some 100-year-old evil being that can feed off of our fears and use them to exploit. It's just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. This is, I think this film in particular, this version, is a perfect example of style over substance. This movie was gorgeous. I mean, yeah. The sets, it looked like you were in almost like a haunted house at times, or you were in this town of Derry. And even like down to when we're in the house and each kid is having their fear played out, it felt like you were following them through a room in some sort of haunted house theme park.
The scenes in the house were probably the best scenes in the movie. Those Absolutely. Are pretty fantastic. That was real good. I really liked everything that happened in there. It was real scary. Bill Skarsgård did a fantastic job with those kids. And what I love is, I don't know if you knew this, but the producers and the director wouldn't introduce the kids to him before they shot those scenes.
Oh my god.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they met him for the first time doing those scenes.
That's, you know, that's interesting. I do wonder how often that happens when with kids who are in horror movies. Like, how real do they really want to make it?
Well, you know what's funny is, I guess pretty often, because I just recently read a story for Annabelle Creation where Anthony LaPaglia, who's one of the actors in that movie, did the exact same thing, like isolated himself from the kids while they were shooting.
Yep. You know who else did that? Ryan Reynolds did that when he, was it Ryan Reynolds? I believe it was, who did the Amityville movie.
Oh, really? Really?
Because he knew that these kids he was portraying their father, and
right.
that he had to brutally murder them. He did not want to have any sort of connection with the actors beforehand.
That's awesome.
Which is interesting. I would think it would be the other way around. You would want to build a relationship with these kids who are supposed to be your children, making it all that more powerful when he actually murders them.
But, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't really thought about that. It always just kind of made sense to me, but now that you say that.
it is interesting. Now, Bill Skarsgård. Now, how do you think he compares to Tim Curry?
It's apples and oranges.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, he is not he did a perfectly fine job, and I don't mean to say like he's no Heath Ledger, he didn't do a very good job. But it is very much Jack Nicholson did his thing in 89, Tim Curry did his thing in 90, Heath Ledger did his thing in Dark Knight, and Bill Skarsgård did his thing in this. I think it's different enough and stands enough on its own. It's just a different take, and it's a very grounded kind of take. Like, I love if there's something just kind of like inhuman about him that just really works. His physical, he got more opportunities. Yeah, Tim Curry was probably like 40 by the time he played Pennywise, I think, or somewhere around there. Bill Skarsgård's like 25. And so because of that, you get to see some really solid physicality from him. Like, he's really, which is very much more akin to like how he is in the book, which he's always like, doing cartwheels and stuff like that. Just a very, there was a lot more like body work that he got to do. There's that one scene where he's like in just dance, doing a jig in front of Beverly, just staring at her with these like dead eyes.
Ugh, and
it is freaky.
Now, there are times in this where they roll his eyes like into the back of his head. There are some terrifying close-ups of this clown where I think the CGI did work. Others, not so much, but overall, some extremely visceral aesthetics in this movie. Even the first scene where the boy gets his arm taken off by it.
Oof. I was like, good on you guys. Good on you.
Like, they just went for it.
Yeah, I mean, they did. But then they, he steals him away inside of the sewer. It's much more effective if what usually happens, which is he gets his arm ripped off and then is left there to die in the gutter.
Yes. We like our kids dead and cold.
And in the gutter.
In the gutter.
In the gutter. So yeah, there's definitely elements. I will say there's one moment that felt like every now and then I can watch something, I'm like, I could be like, oh, I bet that was a studio note. And there's that part in the end when they're in his lair or whatever, and all the kids are floating up in the air. And I was just like, that's an executive going like, well, I mean, he's saying they all float this whole time. Like, we got to show them floating.
They got to float.
Yeah, they got to float. We got to show them floating. No. Trust me. It'll make sense. It's only going to make sense if we show them floating at some point. So we're going to do it. We're going to show them floating. Like, I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah, but, it was interesting that the climax of the film, it seems like, is where they took a lot of liberties.
Yeah, and I will say, though, some of them worked, because I don't know if you know what happens or remember what happens in the book, but it's like, when they defeat him, or quote-unquote defeat him, it's through like a whole thing where Bill like goes into his mind, basically, and then they go into this other universe, and Bill gets transported past a giant turtle, which is referenced in the movie. Uh-huh. There is a turtle watching over them. The turtle is Pennywise's natural enemy, and Bill sees it as he's being transported through the universe towards the Deadlights, and then he's able to resist Pennywise and stop him and hurt him. But I liked what they did here, which is definitely leaned into the, I just wish they leaned into it a little bit more. They overcome their fear, and because Pennywise like becomes what they believe, if they believe something will hurt him, it does, and that's what happens. And I love Richie's little turn moment of like taking that baseball bat and just going to beat the shit out of it.
Absolutely. Very unexpected.
Yeah, and I thought that fight against him was where some of the CG was real effective, because all of a sudden he's just morphing into a bunch of different things, which is very much from the book.
Right.
Which was really cool, and something you cannot do, you couldn't have done in 1990. and you can't really do practically. It works really well with that CG. Like, and you even see him turn into a spider form.
Yes.
That everybody hates.
Oh, thank you
really
for saying that.
I love, you know what? And I'll say it right now. I'll go on record. I always understood it in the miniseries, and I understand it even more in the book. It's all there. It's just what their minds can handle.
Yep.
So good.
Yes. Yeah, this movie, I think, it succeeded on so many levels. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun. I think sure. They really found the heart of Stephen King. It's for a new generation. And I think we have to keep that in mind. Like, we're not saying, oh, it's nothing like the miniseries. Oh, he doesn't.
No, absolutely not. I'm disgusted by how many times I've said, well, in the source material, I'm not that person.
I don't want to be that person.
Usually, I'm not that person. I'm a man who talked about how much I love that Batman v Superman just kind of took the source material and threw it up against the wall. And made a lot of nods. But we don't. That's neither here nor there.
Well,
we don't have time for that right now.
You know, if you want to see literally an homage scene by scene, watch Gus Van Sant's Psycho. That is a piece of shit.
Exactly.
Incarnate, where every move, every line, every shot is practically identical to the original and completely worthless to humanity.
Yeah, but in this, I really think that they decided, like, while there were some choices that they made that I did not particularly understand as why they would – like changes that they made, there were some where I was like, oh, that's a really good – that was a solid idea. That was a good thing to change. Mm-hmm. So I thought that, I enjoyed myself far too much. I'm also excited to see the sequel because, like I said, there's nothing that could have made me happier than having the titles come up at the end and it's saying chapter one across it just to make it very clear. Like, you know, it could be like a Kill Bill type situation. And while Kill Bill 1 is not as complete of a film as this one is, I do think there will be some – they have a unique opportunity to really fill in some gaps and fix some of the problems in a second movie because they're still going to be telling the story.
Absolutely.
They can just improve on it and on what they've already done and already set up.
Yes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. In the semi-mythology we get with Pennywise, this happens every 27 years. Am I correct?
27 to 30 years, yeah.
Okay.
They say pretty definitively 27 in this movie, which is fine. It doesn't matter. But it's, you know, it's about 27 to 30 years.
So I guess if we're looking at a chapter two for this, if and when – I mean, I would assume it would come out with the box office for this movie. They'd be stupid.
Oh, yeah. This is all but going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, this is – yeah.
No,
I've already
wondering,
been picking my dream cast.
I was going to say, we're not going to be seeing any of the same actors, presumably. I mean,
going 27 years older.
Yep. Which will be interesting. I wonder if they'll keep Bill Skarsgård, you know, this immortal clown. He is going to be the new icon for this, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have to. Oh, my God. And I can't wait. It has to. Oh, I will say that is something I'm very excited to see. Like, it has to be the same actor. And they have where this movie is, these movies are like Kill Bill, I will say, is they do have that opportunity where, like, this movie does have more of a not throwaway feel, but it's more of like an adventure, just like a fun. This is something that happens to these kids and they fight back against it. And this is the story kind of feel to it, almost like kind of the first Kill Bill. It's kind of the straightforward, like, fun action-y revenge movie. But then you get into the second movie and it's got the heart and the explanation and you really get details as to what happened and you get the emotion of the story and the background. And I hope that they're able to handle it correctly. And I don't want to, like, you know, go against anybody. Some talented people worked on these movies, but I do think that I feel like there was if there's enough from Cary Fukunaga's story that got used, that got him a writing credit, that means that they have an interesting challenge ahead of them doing it without him.
And I mean,
because otherwise they would have just scrapped they would have started from scratch and they would have done their own thing. And that's clearly not what happened. And he's not going to be around for the second one. And the second one has to be deep. It has to be about these people, like these kids coming back as adults. It's about rediscovering your childhood and like memories and how to fit. Like, it's got to be where a lot of the meat is.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
And presumably how these events in this one affected their growing up.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
It's not like these things can just be shaken off and they're like, oh yeah, it's been 27 years. Crap. You know, like these things are going to haunt them for the rest of their lives.
Well, no. I mean, they'll haunt Mike, but that's the whole twist if you don't. If I don't know if you remember.
Spoiler.
Spoilers. They leave town and everyone forgets everything. They forget each other.
Yeah.
And then 27 years later, Mike is hanging out at home and he's the murders start up again and he calls everybody one by one. And all of a sudden they're like, I'm sorry, Mike Hanlon, who are you? And then, and then he's just, then they boom, it's like a flash. So, yeah. Oh, I'm so excited.
As long as they take their time. And like you said, they really give it the heart and love that I think they did with this one. You know, the entire creative team, from the writers to the director to the cast, everyone, it's clear, was
producers too.
Yeah.
Seth Graham Smith, who's more of like, you know, that's the Pride, Prejudice and Zombies guy. He's been an active producer on this since Cary Fukunaga was supposed to be doing it. Yeah, and has only stayed on since then. It was a very active part of production. So we'll see. I'm gonna see this one in theaters again before it's out of theaters. I still had a blast, and I can't wait to. I had to get up and pee. During the cleaning the blood scene, so I gotta go back and do that. I'm okay with that only because I heard it was one of the weirdest things in the movie.
It was pretty weird. You got like this nice 80s song going on.
Yeah, I was about to say, just because the music choice was jarring. That moment should have some weight to it.
Oh, absolutely.
I can't judge. I'll have to see it again because I didn't see that scene, but I know. In the books and in the miniseries, she says like a whole like, you know, once they helped her clean it, it never came back.
Mm-hmm.
But they also don't show it happening again. So who knows? That blood scene was great.
Yeah.
That was a great ultra bloody, her just getting trapped in there. Like there was some good – that dude is a good director and I'm excited to see him he's doing a pilot for Lock and Key for Hulu, which is a comic book series by Stephen King's son. Did you ever read that?
No, I have not.
Ryan, I'm holding to you to this because it's being recorded. You go out tomorrow and get the first volume of Lock and Key. And if you're not hooked, I don't know what to do for you. But it was a comic book series by Joe Hill, who's Stephen King's son, and this artist Gabriel Rodriguez. And it's about these kids who, after their father's grisly murder, return to his childhood home, which he inherited, and find these special keys that give them like secret powers. But then they also find out that there is a demon that will stop at nothing to get the keys for themselves, and it is amazing. It is one of the best comic books that's ever been created. It's got a finite run. I think there's maybe like 38 issues. It's great. Great horror comics. Great stuff.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, and Andy Muschietti, who is doing the pilot, which there was a pilot that was done like maybe like 7 years ago or so that didn't get picked up, but they're doing a new pilot for Hulu. He's directing it. He's co-writing it with Joe Hill, and the kid who plays Georgie is going to play a main little kid in the TV show.
Amazing. This is what I love about streaming.
I think Beverly's going to be in it too.
Is she? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
She was great, by the way, the actress.
She was real good. And if they don't get Amy Adams to play an older version of her, I feel bad.
That's what I said. She looks – oh, my God.
She looks just like her.
With the money that this movie made, she would be dumb to not take that role.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be interested to see. I think it was clocked to make like – $60 million by the end of the weekend. It'll probably make more than that, and that's, you know, twice its budget.
That makes
its money back in the first weekend. We're getting a sequel. I just hope they give them more money. I want more dairy. Ryan, there was such a big tea. There's plenty of great like book stuff in there, but so Richie, and they have it in this too. Like Richie is constantly like, you know, he's the joking one and the loudmouth and doesn't really believe what's going on, and then he has a great moment in this movie where he's finally like, oh, shit. In the book, there's this giant statue of Paul Bunyan, right, that's in the center of Derry. And it's in the movie. In the book, it bends over and talks to him, like gets right in his face, and then turns into Pennywise, and then like starts like chasing after him. It's crazy. So when they showed that statue in, and I'm pretty sure it's at a moment where he's just like, guys, I haven't seen anything. You're all nuts. And I was like, oh my God, is he gonna see, is that thing gonna come to life? And you know what? Maybe if the budget was $60 million, it would have.
Yep. Here's my fear. The budget will be upped by millions for the sequel. I just hope that it doesn't overshadow the story they're trying to tell. Making it too big budget Hollywood.
Agreed. And it could, as long as they stick to the, you know, they... I'll be interested to see what they do for a finale for this next one. They have some choices. Especially since they could take it right from the source material if they want, since they changed it so much for this one. But I liked the grounded feel, but I would like to see them. It's interesting. It was interesting watching kids have to act like adults to get out of this.
Yes.
I want to see adults have to act like kids.
Ooh, what a wonderful turn of events. Yeah.
Like, I really want them to have to use their imagination, have to do something like step out of their comfort zone as far as like believing. Because one thing they don't really touch on a lot in this, I mean, they mention it briefly with the blood and stuff, but it's like the adults just don't see this stuff. Like, yeah. They don't even, because technically what it's doing is not even real most of the time. So it will be interesting to see these adults who are seeing this in the sequel interacting with other adults who aren't, what that lends to it. So yeah, they got some challenges ahead of them, but I'm excited. We'll see.
Me too, man. I think, you know, we can both agree this was a good movie. It was a solid flick.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I will definitely be going to see it again.
Yep, I'll be seeing it again within the week, easily.
All right. Yep. Well, I think that's it. I think we've pretty much covered it all.
I hope people enjoyed.
I hope people go see the movie. I hope we didn't give away too
much. Yeah, form your own opinion. It's a great time of year for it. It's already starting to feel like fall, and this is a great – you know me and how I love me some Shocktober, and I have to get prepared early this year.
Yes.
Because I'll be on my honeymoon and having my wedding during October this year, but I am – this is a great thing way to kind of kick things off.
Get things going. Yes, for those who don't know, I did want to mention every October, Andrew does do, what, a whole month, right, of covering horror movies.
The entire purpose of my podcast, Half White Son of a Black Man, is thrown out the window so I can bring in some friends to talk about horror movies. And Ryan, I will have to, like I said, it will be – last year I did 9 episodes. I would say I do about 4 episodes a month of the podcast regularly. We did 9 last year. Mostly, except for one episode, each episode was 3 movies apiece. So I watched 3. I ended up for the month watching, on my own and because of the podcast, somewhere around like 33 horror movies.
My God.
It might have been way more than that, actually, because there was once that I stopped counting because I started early. Anyway, this year it'll be a little bit lessened, but I would like to propose right now for fun. For a nice little synergy, we might try to get Nick in on this, who you are usually in cohorts with. Yes, who
absolutely.
I have you guys come on. But I would love to talk about the miniseries.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
We'll do a nice little crossover. I'll repost this bad boy, and then we'll also talk about the miniseries for it.
So
people can have that to look forward to come Shocktober time.
Awesome. And where can we find the podcast, Andrew?
You can go to www.halfwhitesonofablackman.com. You can go to Half White Son of a Black Man on Instagram, Half White Son of a Black Man on Facebook, and at official HWSOBM on Twitter.
Perfect.
You got options.
There's
and iTunes.
Options.
You can go to iTunes. You can just type into iTunes or wherever podcasts are found.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing. iTunes. I forgot.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Who'd have thunk it?
They do good work, yeah. Well, this has been an impromptu review of It. Guys, go see It in theaters now, and let us know what you think. Once we post this, please feel free to contact us. Let us know your thoughts, and we will maybe even read some of them on the next episode of Somewhere in the Skies. We shall see.
Nice. Cool, man.
All right, Andrew, thank you for joining me all the way from New York, one coast to the other, and... Congratulations on the wedding, my friend.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I'll see you there.
I will see you
right?
there.
Huh?
Cool. Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. Ow! yoga.
And you too, Andrew. You too will float.
Somewhere in the Skies is produced by Third Kind Productions in association with Antica Productions and the Antica Podcast Network. To learn more, visit anticaproductions.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.